Welcome to the Radiant Springs Church Podcast. Check out our website at radiantsprings.com for more information about us. If you are challenged with what you hear on this podcast, come join us on Sunday mornings at 10 o'clock for our contemporary worship, message, fellowship, and coffee. Radiant Springs, refreshing, relevant, real.
Well, it's good to have Mike here with us today. He'll provide a little more of an introduction. We corresponded a little bit on the phone and email, so it's good to have him here with us, and I'm going to turn it over to him. So let's give him a warm welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. It's great to be here. We were here in Nebraska for the first time earlier this year. Oh, no, it was last year. And it was during the drought, and I came up here and you saw all the corn crops were turning brown. So it was great to come up here this time and see everything so nice and green. But we enjoy really being able to come up here. And thanks, Pastor Brent, for asking me to come. My wife couldn't be with me this morning. She came up to Nebraska with me, but she's not feeling well this morning, so she sends her greetings. I have two sons. One is 26, and he is presently on an online school. It's like his sixth year in school. We would ask that you pray for him for two reasons. One, he's in school to become a digital artist. He has a real heart to do cartooning and things like that, and he wants to use it for the Lord. He's believing God's calling him through digital art ministry to reach 1 billion people for Christ. And you can do that now on the internet, instantaneously reach 1 billion people around the world. He's already been approached by, after the Lord put that on his heart, he was approached by missionaries in China, India, and Africa. And you've got quite a few billion right there. So if the Lord, as he goes through his schooling, he needs your prayers. He also has a debilitating skin condition that keeps him at home a lot. That's why he's in school at home. We're just believing God for a miracle for that. I have a younger son. He's 21, and he's going to Evangel University in Springfield, and he's studying computer science and business management. So I'm kind of hoping that they're going to turn out to be the Roy and Walt Disney of the family. You know, one's the creative one, the other one's got the business sense. So we'll see what the Lord does with that. We're part of an exciting ministry. I guess you saw that big thing on the table when you walked in. It's not usually there on Sunday morning. So we work with Builders International. And what we do is we coordinate teams around the world to do construction ministry. You know, everyone is called to do a ministry. How many believe that? You know, not everyone is called to be a pastor. Not everyone is called to be an evangelist or those ministries that are out front. But, you know, God calls a lot of people with special gifts. And so one of them is called the gift of helps. And a church cannot get along without people that have that gift. They'd rather be behind that curtain working away while pastor's ministering, whether it be in prayer or getting ready for a function or something. And God just uses you. It's a great thing. That's one of the gifts I have, is a gift of helps. In fact, I came in this morning and saw that electrical stuff sitting on pastor's table there in the front office. And I'm an electrician. I'm a master electrician by trade. And I said, would you like me to put that stuff in for you before I go? Because I always carry my tools around with me because I go to churches. And pastors always say, man, you're an electrician. I could have used you. So I start putting my tools in the truck now. So you never know. But God has a special gift he's placed in each one of us and a talent that we can use to bless the Lord. And many men and women think, well, how can God use me on the mission field, yet I feel called to go? You know, I was in that same position for years thinking, well, Lord, I don't feel called to plant a church in Africa or in some forsaken area. I don't feel called to do that, but I have a gift and a talent that I can use. You use what I have. And God opened the door for us to get into construction ministry. And years and years ago, we were in Belgium, and working there and building churches and working with French pastors there, and it was wonderful. But our ministry now mainly concerns Asia, and I'll tell you more about that in a few moments. But turn with me this morning to Exodus chapter 25. I just want to read a short verse here. One of the blessings we had when we were living in Belgium, we lived in the French. You know, Belgium is half is the southern half of Belgium is all French because they're on the French border, and then the top half of Belgium is all Flemish. Everybody here is Flemish? No, see that nobody knows what Flemish is. it's kind of a forgotten culture, forgotten language. It's an old German dialect, and. Well, we were there. Our kids were young then, and so, you know, when you take your kids anywhere, the best way to keep them happy is bring videotapes. Amen? Well, now they're discs or CDs. But our kids, you know, you couldn't just turn on the TV over there because they're speaking French and they're speaking Flemish. So the kids are little, so we would bring videos from home that spoke English, and then we'd get out into the Flemish areas of the country, and they like to learn English. In fact, they have to learn two languages to graduate high school. They have to learn French and they have to learn English because French is also a country, their country's language, but English is the economy, the economic language of Europe. So we get into the Flemish areas, and rather than dub over their movies, they would put subtitles. They'd leave it in English and the Flemish would read the subtitles, and that way they would learn English and by reading that. So we got all excited because we'd go in those Flemish stores and buy the videotapes that in America would cost $20. They're only $5. So of course, we cashed in on all the Disney videos. And because my kids grew up in Orlando. I was an electrician in Orlando and worked for Disney World and things like that. So we were just Mickey Mouse maniacs, you know, so. So Disney was always something they enjoyed. So we picked up this one video that we'd never seen before. And how many here ever heard of Song of the South? Oh, there you go. That's rare. People that haven't heard, how many here have ever heard the song Zippity-Doo-Dah? There you go. That's what that movie, that's where that song is from. And it's all about Brer Rabbit and Brer Fox. And one of the parts of the story is, and near the end, Brer Rabbit and Brer Fox have captured, Bear and Brer Fox have captured the rabbit, and he's trying to figure out how to get out of the predicament he's hanging in a cave by a noose, you know, around he's all tied up and hanging down from the ceiling. They're ready to skin him and eat him and whatever they're going to do. So Brer Rabbit just starts laughing. He starts laughing his head off, and of course, Brer Bear's the big dumb guy, and he says, "What are you laughing about?" "Oh, I'm just thinking about my laughing place." He goes, "Laughing place? What's your laugh?" "Oh, every time I think of it, I just start laughing." So he goes, "I'll let you go free if you show me where your laughing place is." And of course, Brer Fox is yelling at him, "He's just trying to fool you, you fool, you know." And so, Rabbit convinces Brer Bear that he's going to take him to his happy place. So he leads them off into the woods, and he leads them right into a big bush full of hornets. You know, one of them's got it on his head when they come out of the bushes, and the typical cartoon, there's a swarm of hornets following after him as they're running off. And you can hear Brer Bear yelling, "This ain't no happy place. What are you talking about?" And Brer Rabbit says, "I was talking about my happy place, not your happy place." How many here have a happy place or a laughing place? How many here have a place that they really look forward to going? How about after work, after a long, hard day, you want to go home, have something to eat and relax, kick your shoes off? You always have that place that you feel comfortable in, and there's a wonderful place. Usually we have two or three places we love to be. Hopefully this is one of yours. Here at church, where you know the Lord's going to be, and you feel that comfort and acceptance not only by the Lord, but your brothers and sisters here. Amen. In Exodus chapter 25, verse 8, God's speaking to Moses, and he says, "Let them construct a sanctuary for me, that I may dwell among them." You know, God has a happy place too, a laughing place. That's right here with his family. And he's been desiring to dwell with his people and with his family since the very beginning of this book. You read it in the garden. He wanted to dwell and spend time every day with Adam and Eve. And until from that time on until this point, God had never appointed a place to dwell with man. This is the first time you read it in scriptures. He says, "Moses, I want you to build a sanctuary for me where I may dwell among my people." Now, we know God does not dwell in houses or places. There's nothing that can contain God except heaven. But God desires to dwell among his people. He desires to have a place. He doesn't just desire to have a people. He desires to have a place too. You can see that all the way through the whole book of the Bible. It goes from to the very end where he says, "In the last days I'm going to renovate the earth and I'm going to live upon the earth." The new Jerusalem is coming down. That the angels will actually look from heaven and say, "Look, God is dwelling with man." So God is looking for a people, but he's also looking for a place. He's looking for a place to manifest his love and the beauty of his gospel and what he's done for man on the cross. The cross is another place where God has manifested his mercy and his grace. So God is always using a place to represent himself or to reveal himself. And to also to dwell so that his people can come and dwell with him. Amen? And that's what I believe that's part of what we're doing in construction ministry. We're coming alongside missionaries who've got us said, "I'm calling you to the uttermost parts of the earth because I want you to set up a place for me. I'm calling you to those people, and we're going to set up a place where people know that's where I dwell." Amen? When we were in Belgium, we first got into hosting teams in 2000. In the early 80s, we were there for a couple of years to help with a church. But then when we came back in 2000 to Belgium, we just felt really called not to work in this other city of Belgium where there was a lot of Americans and they were ministering in an international church there. And everyone spoke English in the church. But we felt called to work in the French part of Belgium. So we were ministering in that church and putting on an addition on the back of this old building. The church was growing. We would say they would sit comfortably 50 people in the auditorium that they had, or they would sit uncomfortably, we would say African style, 70 people. That's because everybody jammed against the walls. There were no bathroom facilities, not much of a kitchen facility in the fellowship hall. So we were there, and we had teams coming in to help us with that. And I kept telling the pastor while we were there, you know, as soon as we put this addition on, this church is going to grow. And he would always smile and kind of agree with me with a smirk on his face like, "Well, you're not a Belgian, but it doesn't work that way here." But I could see in that pastor's heart that he just had a love for his community. You know, when a pastor's called to a community, he's not called to just you. He's called to the city. He's called to love everyone in this community and the surrounding communities, to love people to Christ. And that's what this pastor had. Everywhere I went, I would go with him first, and I'd see all the people that he knew, and they were just people in the town and the commune. And I'd go back in a couple of days later. They'd recognize me because I was with their best friend the other day. "Oh, Jacques, he's my best friend." So I kept telling him, as soon as this sanctuary opens up, it's going to double. And he wouldn't believe me, but Over there, you know, in America, when you went to move into this building, probably, Pastor, when you were renovating, they said you couldn't do anything in here until you passed all the codes, right? They have it called, it's a certificate of occupancy in America. You cannot build something or renovate something and start using it until it's completely safe and completely finished. And over there, they have a whole different idea. America is the only place that does that, well, besides Japan. What I say, their code is, if you ain't scared, we ain't neither. So what it is we put this addition on, and they knocked the wall down. As long as they had a roof on and some heat in there, they were going to have church. And before even before the project was finished, that thing was half full. And today, it's so big, they're asking us to help them build a 500-seat auditorium. So God is moving. When you give God a place to move, a place to love people and to care for people, it grows. Amen? So we came home, and, I'll just tell you more about having the teams. It was so much fun, especially I had been living there for a few years. And, you know, when you move out of your culture into another, it's a whole different thing. When you go to a French culture, they like to kiss people. It's funny. How many here have seen that movie, West Side Story? Remember that movie? You know, you see if you go into New York City, in the real New York City, you're not going to see gang members dancing down the street. I'm just going to tell you that. I've been to New York City. You will not see that. You do not go in those neighborhoods where there are gangs. And if they're dancing in the street, you definitely don't want to be there. But in Belgium, in any French culture, typically, if you do not go up to everyone that you know, the perfect example, if you ever go to Disney World in Florida, if you go to Epcot Center, there's a French pavilion there. If you want to watch, you go down there at a change of shift, because all the French people will come in. We'd see this in the grocery stores, everywhere we go. If I came into work and I was a bag boy at the grocery store, I had to go to everybody on every register and kiss them. Whether it was a man or a woman, I had to kiss them on the cheek twice. So you do that. So we lived in Belgium all that time, so we went to Epcot one time when there was a change of shift, and I watched all the French guys. They'd come in and they'd kiss everybody. You know? They'd go around the whole pavilion and kiss everybody. Well, when we got there, Mark was my youngest son. He was about 8. And he was one of those kids, don't hug me, don't kiss me, don't touch me. And so he's a cute little blonde-headed. He looked like, a lot of kids, people thought he was Kevin from Home Alone. I mean, that's who he looks like, Kevin. So he has the attitude of Kevin, too. But as soon as he found out this was a kiss in church, every Sunday morning, even in the summer, he would sit in the back of the church. He'd put a winter coat on with a hood, pull that tight around him, and cinch up his knees around his face, and because he didn't want anybody kissing him. Now, of course, when he got older and the girls got older, well, that changed, you know. But it was so much fun when you bring teams in to work on different projects, not just mine. And we'd be driving from the airport with about 12 people, and half of them would be these big, burly, husky construction workers, and they're ready to get going. And I'd be in the front lead van, and they'd be behind. And I've been talking to the pastor. Have you ever been in a French culture? No, I haven't. Well, when you get there, even though I just saw this pastor a couple hours ago, he's going to come up, and he's going to greet me, and he's going to kiss me on both cheeks. And as soon as he's done that, he's going to walk right over to you, and he's going to kiss you. And you see this look on his face like, what? Just pretend he's your uncle and it's a wedding and you'll get over it. So, and the fun part is, you know, you get into the church and it's just like you said, you walk in this old beat up building you're going to renovate, and you got this team of all these guys with all their tools and their, you know, they got their jeans on, they're already dirty, you know, just walking in the front door. And we walk up to the pastor, and they're greeting the pastor, and the pastor walks up to me. He gives me two kisses. He walks over to the new pastor, the visiting pastor, gives him two kisses. But the fun part is I would step back and I'd watch all those guys behind the pastor, and they all start doing this. You ain't kissing me, buddy. But that team would begin to work with that pastor and with all those other helpers from the church that are trying to see Christ penetrate their city and change their city. And they start hearing the stories of the miracles. And we see miracles. We would pray for the people, and that you see them get healed or ministered to. And the team would, before the week was up, man, they were excited to be there. And the last couple of days, you'd see them come in the morning, and rather than step away from, I remember one fella, this French guy, he was on more or less on welfare. He was slightly handicapped, and he had this big beard, and he wasn't particularly well, let's just say he wasn't well kept. And he would guard the building at night, and he'd eat breakfast while he was preparing our breakfast. So you'd get there sometime in the morning, and he'd want to kiss all these guys, and he'd have scrambled egg in his beard, you know, and a little bit of croissant crumbs. But by the end of the week, nobody was stepping back anymore. And usually when we would finish up the week or two with the team, we'd always gather around the pastor and pray for his ministry. And it was so wonderful to see that those guys that would be the first ones to back up, they were the first ones to run up to that pastor with tears in their eyes, kissing him goodbye. And we'd have to more or less pack their bags and kick them out the door because they didn't want to leave. It's because they finally felt what it's like to be a missionary. You leave your home, you leave your culture, and you have to adopt someone else's home. Someone else's culture. And at first, you don't like it. It's hard. You don't understand it. You don't agree with it. But before you know it, you have a heart that's been melted by the Lord. And you begin to weep over those communities and over those people. We saw many teams that would come, and before the week was up, we'd have morning prayer, and the Spirit of the Lord would fall, and they begin to intercede for that church. And these great big guys that would come just seemed so hard and just full of energy to work. You'd see the floor. I remember the floor we were working on in our building, it'd be all full of powder by the end of the week from all the drywall dust and plaster dust. You'd see puddles of tears where these guys had been weeping for that church and for that pastor because their hearts were changed. They saw that that's the place where God had called people to come to be ministered to and to be a place of his dwelling so that they could minister to that community. Well, we came home and we just saw a need that there were so many missionaries out there that had so many building projects that they needed help with, that they needed someone in the States to be out over there and more or less get a megaphone and say, hey, look, there's a project in such and such place. It only needs one more team to finish this project or to get this project started. And God called us into Builders International because that's what we do. And we have a great leader with Builders International. He's a civil engineer. He was a civil engineer for the Navy. So he's a great leader. He has a great vision. We've got architects. I'm an electrician. We got plumbers, air conditioning guys, all designing buildings and doing whatever we can do to help a missionary. And Pastor, when you moved into your building here, wasn't it nice to have people say, hey, you know, I know how to do electric. I know how to do air conditioning. I know how to fix that toilet. Because pastors either too busy or sometimes pastors just don't have that ability. And there's many missionaries around the world that are just like that. So we go in, and what we do, we join forces with them. But we had the great pleasure of asking you to come with us. It just takes a little bit. When we started with Builders, we just started in February, and they asked us to take over all of Asia. So we're overseeing projects in China and from Mongolia all the way down to Vietnam, Myanmar, all that part of Asia, and then also the Pacific Rim from Korea all the way down to Fiji and Vanuatu. In fact, we have some great projects in China. How many here know you can go to China? It's accessible. Of course, we just have to follow the rules. And we can actually build a church for $10,000. And they can have church. So we plant these churches out in rural areas of China. We have some student program ministries there where they have larger facilities where they would definitely need some teams to come in and just renovate the buildings and keep them up for the students. It's a great, well, it's kind of like our Chi Alpha. You're familiar with Chi Alpha, it's the campus ministry. It's the same idea, only it's over in China. And they invite the Chinese students come in to learn English, and the government allows them to use the Bible and scriptures to teach them English. So it's a great way to reach the masses there in China. We also have projects throughout the Philippines. I was just thinking, some of the great things that are going on with our teams. We just had one of our guys from our office come back from Honduras. Now, I was excited about this because he had a team that visited from Orlando, where I'm from a big church here that sends out two or three teams a year. And they went down to Honduras to help them build a couple of school buildings. And they had block masons there and roofers. It was a pretty good team. Well, one of the team members there, they actually were doing one other project. It was for the city government in this small village in Honduras where they were building a separate facility in a jail compound for handicapped women. Because many of the times in this situation, the handicapped girls were getting really picked on by all the other female inmates that were in gangs, and they would just beat them up just because they wanted to beat them up. So they were building them a separate facility. And while they were in there, one of the helpers on the team, he's had severe emphysema for over 10 years. And he'd work, and he didn't go so far, and he couldn't breathe anymore. He'd have to sit down. And the pastor, the Honduran pastor and his associate were helping with the project. And one day they saw him sitting over in a corner trying to recover because he was having a spell. They went over there and prayed for him, and they didn't really realize that they were back in this corner. And before you knew it, they saw this guy running around the building. Guy had healed him totally of emphysema. That was an American team member went down there. So a lot of times God will take you somewhere to touch your life. I always used to call it, I forgot what I used to call it. A retreat with blisters is what I would call it. Once you go out and you do something for the Lord, He just blesses you. So many times, though, and I hear the testimony over and over again, we came to bless these people. They have so little, but you walked away. They walk away with a hundredfold blessing. You know, that's a blessing that's written in the scriptures. In the Gospel of John, I think it's John chapter 6. It says, if you give up land, your country, your family for the Lord, in this lifetime, I'm going to bless you a hundredfold. And I really believe these people that would go out and they would sacrifice leaving their country, giving up their vacation, giving up their funds to do this because it all comes out of their own pocket. When you go down there to bless those people, you return with a hundredfold blessing. So we saw people called to missions. We saw people called to ministry in their church. We saw people healed going on these trips. God desires to bless those that want to bless. Also on the same trip, one of our leaders in our office, he always uses the same bus driver for all of his projects in Honduras. He's been working with him for 3 years. He got saved on that last trip. I already told you about China and the projects there. We have a project in Mongolia. How many here want to go to Mongolia? How many here know where Mongolia is? It's a cold place. But Mongolia is a great project. We have the tabernacle evangelism set up in the Philippines. Tabernacle evangelism, it started in Africa. And what they would do is they would set up more or less like we would call in America a metal pole barn. It's just a metal structure with a metal roof, and it's usually a white roof. And what that does is attracts the attention of all the villages around. We've had them plant those in Panama and areas where there's thick jungle. And all of a sudden, there's a white roof out on the mountainside. Well, all the small villages around will see that, and they all come to that spot to say, what's going on here? What's this thing? And that's where they get ministered to. We're doing that in the Philippines. I have the approach to set one up just during School of Missions, where our missionaries came back for some training, and then they go and itinerate and go back out. She wants to plant the very first church on a small island in Micronesia. It's in Kosria, I think it's called. It's a little tiny island, and it'll be the first Assembly of God church in that part of the world. And all we can, it don't take $10,000. They just set up a church and start. We actually have an opportunity to go to Myanmar. Have you anybody heard of Myanmar? That's a communist country. Yeah, it's near Cambodia and over in that area. And God is moving there, and we're allowed to go in and start work on a particular Bible college that's been there for years. They have no problems with the church there. They had problems with the government. The communists came in, took it over. But they had no problems with the church being there, so the Bible school is in desperate repair. We want to get in there and help them. But you can get some information on our table back there. I invite you also to look at our website, because you'll see things posted there. And as time goes on, they're going to actually start posting videos on it now too, where you can see the project go up and be completed. You'll hear about the miracles and the testimonies that are going on. And it's a great ministry. It's a great ministry. I had a great blessing, because now that I'm in Asia Pacific region and working in all the Pacific Rim islands, which are beautiful, I can't wait to go to one of those. But one brother there, he's in the country of Vanuatu. Anybody hear of Vanuatu? But some smart people here. Did anybody ever see those stories on National Geographic or something about the first people that invented bungee jumping? Well, it's a heathen ritual, and they would build these big towers, and they would tie these vines around their legs and jump off the tower, and whoever come the closest to hitting the ground, the mound at the bottom, I don't know if it was a game or what it was. But they were the ones that invented bungee jumping. And they live way out in one of the farther islands. I mean, this is the place where you go, and the only clothes that they wear are leaves, you know. We have a great missionary there. It's Vanuatu is a nation that's just between Fiji Island and New Zealand. So that kind of gives you an idea. It's an island nation in there. A lot of volcanoes. They have over 100 tremors a week. So it's very primitive, very primitive area. This brother goes up into the jungle, and he'll just find a path to a village and begin to go down those paths, and he would just witness to the villagers. I just finally got to meet him a few weeks ago in St. Louis, and he told the story. We used to work with healthcare ministries as well, and they do a great work in Vanuatu, because it's really hard to reach these island chieftains, because when they have a village under control, they're going to follow what this guy says, because he is the biggest machete and the biggest club. And this brother was in one of the outer islands. He would just go up into the jungle hills, and he found this one path to a village, and he took one or two steps down the path, and a warrior jumped out into the path with a big machete in his hand. The wisdom of God, Spirit of God spoke to him and said, do not go past that machete. So the warrior said, the village chief knew that you were in the area. We heard about what you're doing here. We don't want your religion or whatever you're doing in our village. You know, the chiefs has told me to warn you to go away, or we'll kill you. Because up in some of the hills, they used to be headhunters. So these guys are very, very primitive. So, of course, he turned away. Well, just about a year later, they had one of these medical clinic teams come in from America, and they set up the clinic. And he knew that God wanted to touch that village. And so at this particular clinic on this island, a woman shows up, badly beaten by her husband. And the nurse that was attending her, with all, because she was severely bruised and scarred, the nurse that was attending her, in fact, I know her name's Elaine Bennett. She's probably in her 60s, and she loves to take health care trips. And she was from a former marriage where she was a battered wife. So from 7,000 miles away, God sends another battered woman to minister to a battered woman. Well, this lady comes to Christ. She ends up being the chieftain's wife of that village. She goes, he didn't want the gospel to come in through him, but God sent his wife. She receives the Lord, took it back to her village. The whole village eventually got saved, and they're one of the biggest evangelistic tribes in that area of Vanuatu. But the problem that Brian Webb, the missionary there, is having is he's got these villages in these areas where he's trying to reach. He's only one man. He can't go everywhere. And he doesn't know the language is perfect. There's different dialects up into the mountains because when the Polynesians started to migrate around, they started to go into these islands where there were headhunters, and the headhunters moved up into the hills. So there's Polynesian languages on the lower part of the islands. There's headhunter languages up in the upper. So it's really hard for him to reach everyone. But he's finding villagers that are called to evangelize. But they can't read. They can't write. They grow up in these primitive villages. So he came and visited with us, and we're going to start building what he calls the a Bible training center. It's on the largest island of Vanuatu. He already has the property, has the funds for the buildings. We just need teams to go in and do it. And he's going to set up a module idea where there's one big kitchen area. It's probably about 20 feet square. And all it has is a gravel floor, concrete walls up about this high, and four fire pits, one on each corner. And that's where they're going to cook their food. And then they have from this far up, it looks like what you see on Gilligan's Island. You know, it's got the palm frond roof. Because he doesn't want to take them into an area where they have electricity and all this modern stuff, because he wants to get them back up into the jungle. So he'll be able to train 20 families, because right now he's already doing it, but it's a hardship on the families, because when the husband has to travel to the training center, there's no places for the families to live, and that leaves the wife back in the village trying to just to eat. I mean, they have to hunt or go fishing or something. They can't go down to Piggly Wiggly, whatever the grocery store is in town, and buy what they want. They have to go find their food. So what he wants to do is just set up a primitive campsite. There will be four huts for them to live in, one big camp kitchen, some primitive sanitary places for them to use the bathroom, and the only electricity on the whole property is going to be to pump clean water. So they stay healthy, and they learn how to bathe, and you just train them and send them back up into the mountains. Isn't that a great idea? He'll be able to train 20 families at a time. And so I'm excited about doing that. We'd love to have you help. It's an exciting ministry. We get to see many things around the world of what God is doing and how God is moving, seeing many lives change for Christ. While I was at missionary training, I got to meet with all the Asia Pacific people. And but the only problem we have is we have three problems. One, we need people to pray for us. Because when you go out of the country and you're right up front and doing warfare along with those missionaries, our families need prayer and protection. Two, we need teams. We need people that want to volunteer. I'll talk to Pastor about this maybe later on in the month when I give him a call back. But if your church desires to go, we especially ask where there's a large church. We have one church I know in Tennessee. They've built like 2,000 tabernacles in 10 years. I mean, that's a big church. But sometimes there's smaller churches like yours. They can't afford to not only send somebody to help with the team, but to come up with the money for the project. But sometimes there's ways to work around that. And what we're really looking for is people that are dedicated to go. Maybe you can join with a few other churches in the area and do it as a team and do that. So we need prayer, we need teams, but we need your finances as well. And Pastor's going to take an offering for us today. Rob, my wife and I, it's very hard to raise money in this economic time, so we're just believing that God will speak to hearts today to help us reach those that are suffering and in need of the gospel. And we have missionaries out there that have dedicated their lives. Now it's not so bad. We have satellite to keep in communication with people around the world. It's great. But, I mean, there are missionaries years ago that they would say, I'm packing my coffin and gone because I'm not coming back. They would build their own coffin, pack it full of stuff, and head out. But the same heart is in these missionaries that we know in Asia Pacific and in China. They have that same heart. They're saying, you know, I'm going to give up everything, and I'm going to go live in a foreign country, and I'm going to give up everything. They don't have electricity. They don't have some places where they pioneers. There is no clean water. They catch and eat their own food, too. I mean, it's just when they give up and go, they're giving up everything to go. And God blesses them for it. But don't you want to join alongside of those people and help them? But we need your finances to do that personally ourselves. And I also want to let you know that if you get some information off our table and go to our website, if later on in the year, if you feel called, or maybe the church will feel called when you have a particular project you want to go to, you can actually go online and give to the project as well. But I myself, we're here to raise funds for our own traveling expenses and just our basic living expenses here as well. But there's a video they're going to play. You're the first church to see this video. They develop it for the Asia Pacific missionaries. It's a good little video. It's only going to last a couple minutes, but I want to take a moment before Pastor comes up after the video to take the offering. I want to thank you for listening to the Lord as this video plays. Give whatever the Lord puts on your heart to give, and we really appreciate it. God bless you guys.